This is KBLULP in Logan. My name is Richard Arlen Blake. I'd like to welcome you all back to my next episode of Ballad of Shenish, Folklore Now. Like in my last episode, I do want to point out that I will probably not be affiliated with KBLULP for much longer, since I am no longer exactly associated with Utah State University, which is where KBLULP is run from. Though they did say that I can continue to put my podcasts on their website, that might not be the case forever, and therefore I will be saying otherwise if my broadcast is going to end up somewhere else, especially any broadcasts that aren't Baladishan-ish. Those I do not put onto that website because I think that just one specific show is what's going to be emphasized on that particular avenue. And in the future, I'm hoping to branch off into doing a couple of different things. But almost everything I do is affiliated in the folklore or the folk traditions area, so things are going to pretty much remain that way. Last time I had decided to take my podcast in a specific regional direction because I felt that as an American I wanted to be able to reach out into all the different parts of this country to look into regional folklore and what makes each state unique compared to the other states in the Union. And therefore, I decided that I was going to start doing folklore of different states within the Union. I do not know if I'll be able to pull off 50 of them before I'm done doing my work here with this podcast. Who knows? We'll see. But last time I talked about Rhode Island and the folklore that's affiliated with it, things that are unique to Rhode Island, and I thought that Rhode Island was really fascinating. And of course, the reason I had chosen Rhode Island was because in grammar school I had actually done a report on Rhode Island, and so I actually had kind of grown a fondness to the state of Rhode Island and felt that would be a good place to start. So this time I am going to delve into the folklore and traditions of the state of Delaware. So why should I choose the state of Delaware? The basic reason, of course, is that there are a few things about Delaware that contrast with the state of Rhode Island. Granted, Delaware is the second smallest state, while Rhode Island's the smallest, but that's not the reason why I chose Delaware. There are a couple reasons why I chose Delaware. For those of you who know your American history, the state of Rhode Island was the last one whose delegates ratified the Constitution of the United States. They did this in 1790, and this was 2 years after everyone else had already accepted it and were ready to go with the new government. The state of Rhode Island, of course, was worried that as a smaller state, it would be overwhelmed by the larger states in the Union, and the states of New York and of Massachusetts and Virginia, of course, had much larger populations, and they thought that they wouldn't have much of a say in things. Some of that, of course, was eased when they came up with a compromise when they said that every state was going to have two senators, while the House of Representatives would be represented based on population. That's what brought most of the other smaller states into the Union, but of course, Rhode Island was holding out and finally agreed. With Delaware, they are actually what is called the first state of the United States. The reason they are called the first state is they are actually the first state whose delegates ratified the Constitution of the United States. That is certainly a great honor that they hold on to dearly, and that is why they are called the first state, just like California is the Golden State because of the gold rush that happened there. Florida is the Sunshine State because the sun sure shines an awful lot there. And, you know, Maryland's the Garden State, and every state has its own designation. New York's the Empire State, but Delaware is the first state. Great bragging rights. We are the first state of the United States. Another thing about Delaware is that I was actually, strange as it was, I actually lived on a road that was called Delaware Drive. And that's another reason why this state kind of popped into my head, and it's sort of meshed a bunch of things together that kind of gave me the idea, well, here's another state that has something kind of historical in my experiences, and it's another state that is one of the original 13. It has a very interesting history and folklore despite its size, and it played an important role within the Revolutionary period and, of course, the Constitution period of the United States. So Delaware is situated there off the East Coast. It pretty much is connected to Maryland by the Chesapeake Bay. Its history and Maryland's history is connected together really well for a long time, even before the Declaration of Independence. The state of Delaware was actually originally part of the New Amsterdam colony of the Dutch that had been taken away from by the British. From that region, we get the states of New York and Maryland and Delaware. Its name comes from the Delaware River that was actually named after a former governor of the state of Massachusetts who had significant influence in that region of the United States. Of course, it was known as Delaware before the American Revolution, but the people of Massachusetts, a lot of them actually migrated from there into Delaware, and so it has some of the New England elements of culture to it, just like Virginia and Rhode Island and Connecticut do as well. So perhaps the first thing that I'll mention is some of the first things that I mentioned when talking about the state of Rhode Island. Every state has a state bird, a state flower, a state tree, a state mammal, or something to those effects. I'm not quite sure if every single state has chosen such a thing, but when it comes to the state items, at least Delaware does have one of each of these. Delaware's state bird is the Delaware blue hen, or blue chicken. Just like Rhode Island Red, it's named after the state. And the state flower is the peach blossom. There is a story, of course, about why the peach blossom was chosen as the state flower that I might get into a little bit later. But some of the reasons why these things become official state items is based on the whims of the people who are in charge. And I am not aware that of anything that has been officially chosen and then having it change, except when it comes to the state sport. Because there was actually an example of when a state sport was changed because their original state sport was not well thought of, maybe, I'm not sure. But the state tree is the American holly, and the state animal is the horseshoe crab. Now, if you've ever seen a horseshoe crab, it is a really interesting looking creature, and once you see it, you will definitely know why it is referred to as the horseshoe crab. The Delaware colony, it was founded back in 1638 by a man named Peter Minuit. Interestingly enough, even though he originated among the Dutch colonists who had come to the New World, he was actually setting up this colony under the flag of Sweden because he had essentially been chased out by his Dutch overlords and decided that he would go and set up this area that would at first be called Fort Christina in honor of one of the Swedish queens. And when he set this colony up, it was settled largely by Dutch and some Finnish settlers. For a while, it was fairly prospering under the flag of Sweden until a stupid governor of that area decided to attack the nearest Dutch colony that hadn't really assented to the fact that this land belonged to Sweden now. And so the Dutch, in retaliation, went and they retook this land and made it again part of New Netherlands. But Minuit actually died the year after he founded his own colony, so he wasn't around to see this little fiasco that went on between the Dutch and the Swedes. And then, of course, later on in the century, the British and Dutch would fight it out, with the British eventually coming up on top in the end. This particular part of colonial history of the United States, I find really interesting. I'm not going to go into a lot of details because some of the stuff is really complicated, and this is a folklore podcast, not a history podcast per se. I will discuss historical things as they relate to the folklore that I am going to be using and explaining here on the podcast, of course. I just need to point out, of course, that after the Dutch had been kicked out and the other colonies were kind of orchestrating how they were going to divide up this territory they got from the Dutch, that William Penn's colony tried to go in and seize a lot of this territory for itself, as did the colony that would be called Maryland. But somehow it managed to, the counties in the lower parts of this part of the state were not completely incorporated within the governance of the Penn colony or that of Maryland. And so the people there just kind of considered themselves outside of that other boundary, and tradition just sort of made Delaware into what it is as a separate entity before it was officially accepted as such by royal charter a couple years later. So that's probably all the history of Delaware I need to tell you right now. The next thing I want to do is to take this into a musical direction. Now, this podcast, of course, is dedicated to regional folklore within the state of Delaware, and every region has its own kinds of folk music. Even something as small as Delaware could have its own unique music. And while I was flipping through different things, looking to see if there was any folk music distinctly Delawarean, I actually came across a concept that I hadn't really thought of before, and that is the concept of an official state song. 49 out of the 50 states actually have at least one state song, one kind of anthem or whatever, dedicated to that particular state. Delaware's song is called Our Delaware. It was written by a man named George Breswick Hinson back in 1904. And then it was later put to music by a symphony, and it became the official state anthem in 1925. And the reason why I hesitated to actually talk about this was because I had always spoken about folklore being bottom up, and a lot of the music when I was doing the folk dissections, I was explaining to you how, you know, each specific aspect of folk music was covered within a specific song. Here, this song is fairly old, but it is not what one might necessarily call a grassroots song. It is kind of a top-down song. However, it is a regional song. And it was written to commemorate the greatness of Delaware, the beauty of Delaware, to be exact. And it's to make the people of Delaware really stop and think about what makes their state a great state, what makes it unique. Delaware is the second smallest state in the Union, after all. And I just decided that, well, I forgot to do this with Rhode Island because I didn't know that there was such a thing as a state song. But here with Delaware, I feel that I at least need to bring this out because this is traditional culture. It's formal, but it's still traditional culture. That is why I'm going to end up playing the song for you. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get a recording with all four verses in it. The one that I was able to obtain has the first two verses, actually. Despite that fact, I think this is still a really interesting song. When you stop and you listen to it, I want you to think about what the people of Delaware must be thinking when they are hearing this song, when they are taking pride in it. I have not talked to any Delawareans to see just, you know, how many of them really know this song and what they really like about it, because I'm from California and there is a state song of California as well, and there's a state song of Utah, but I never knew what they were until I had looked it up when discussing and discovering state songs. But from what I've seen, a lot of people in Delaware do actually know this song, so just stop and listen to it and think about it. And then after the song is done, I'm going to read to you the two verses after the two following verses after the ones that you're going to hear on this particular recording.
Oh, the hills of dear Newcastle and the smiling vales between, when the corn is all in tassel and the meadowlands are green, where the cattle crop the clover and its breath is in the air, while the sun is shining over our beloved Delaware. Oh, our Delaware, our beloved Delaware, for the sun is shining over our beloved Delaware. Oh, our Delaware, our beloved Delaware, here's the loyal son that pledges faith to good old Delaware. Where the wheat fields break and billow in the peaceful land of Kent, where the toiler seeks his pillow with the blessings of content, where the bloom that tints the peaches cheeks of merry maidens share, and the woodland chorus preaches a rejoicing Delaware. Oh, our Delaware, our beloved Delaware, for the sun is shining over our beloved Delaware. Oh, our Delaware, our beloved Delaware, here's the loyal son that pledges faith to good old Delaware. Here's the loyal son that pledges faith to good old Delaware.
So what did you think about that anthem of Delaware? Did it seem inspiring to you? Something to really latch on to is the pride of Delaware? I'm sure for a lot of people it does. I am not a Delawarean, so, you know, of course it's not going to have as much of a hold on me. As I said, of course, there are actually two verses that are missing from that, and I'm going to read these two to you really quickly and then and make a comment, and then we're going to move on to the next part of this podcast. So the third verse starts like this. It says, "Dear old Sussex, visions linger of the holly and pine, of Henlopen's jeweler's finger flashing out across the brine, of the gardens and hedges, and the welcome waiting there for the loyal son that pledges faith to good old Delaware." And then, of course, you have the chorus. And then, "From Newcastle's rolling meadows, through the fair rich fields of Kent, to the Sussex shores hear echoes of the pledge we now present. Liberty and independence we will guard with loyal care, and hold fast to freedom's presence in our home state Delaware." The original version of the song actually only had three verses. This fourth verse actually was added later and is kind of a culmination of the finalizing of the anthem, but it really brings the song out to its strongest point there. Clearly, people of Delaware were proud of their identity, no matter how small their state is or the fact that they're one of the least populated in the country. The people of Delaware hold great pride with who they are. And I hope any Delawareans hearing me recite the words to this song can forgive my monotone sounding voice while I was reciting the words. I don't always sound really musical when I'm reading poetry and music out loud. It's something I have to work on. Now it's time for me to take the conversation up into another direction, a familiar direction for those of you who've been paying attention to my podcast. We've discussed the food ways of Delaware and music, and those things, of course, are really important. But I always seem to find myself going back to the subject of the supernatural and ghosts, things that go bump in the night, people who go and they see things that cannot be explained. They're always something. Those items interest me very much, especially when it's something of very old extraction that has carried down to us into the present day from the days of the mystic past. And the first story that I want to talk about actually concerns the Civil War in the United States. So the Civil War, of course, raged across all of the United States at the time. There were 33 states at the time. Actually, Kansas was added as the 34th state, like just at the beginning of the Civil War. But Kansas's entrance into statehood didn't have as much of an effect on the precursors up to the Civil War. But so there were 33 states, and there were almost an equal number of slave states and free states, but somehow there became 33 states, and there were more free states than there were slave states. And the victory of Abraham Lincoln in 1860 essentially spurred the southern states into seceding from the Union. Because one of the, I'd say the primary, probably not the only reason, but the primary reason for this civil war was slavery. One would assume that all of the slave states would end up fighting with the South, but Abraham Lincoln and his allies managed to keep four of the slave states from leaving the Union. And, you know, those four border states, as they called them, there was a lot of fighting that went on across those states. And Delaware, being the state that we're dealing with today, of course, is of prime importance and interest for this podcast. There is a fort named Fort Delaware. Fort Delaware, a fort that was built on the Delaware River there in that state. And it was a place where they put prisoners of the Confederacy that they had picked up on the battlefield. They started cramming them in there. Of course, no prison ever seems to be big enough to hold all the people that they try and put in there. And the Union kept throwing more and more people in there. The prison, of course, began to get really infested with rats, disease, malnutrition, because they couldn't feed everybody really easily. Some of those people died very painful, unpleasant deaths, either at the hands of disease or sometimes at the hands of Union soldiers. A lot of people who go and visit Fort Delaware actually do say that they do feel a kind of invisible presence, something that is in pain or something that's really sad or horrible. You can tell that something horrible had happened there. And every now and then they do say that people have seen a ghost here and there, but no one can really identify who these ghosts are. Some of them, they say, are wearing Confederate soldier uniforms and are wandering aimlessly around there at night. Or there has been actual speculation that people might have seen some Union soldiers as well as Confederate soldiers. Ghosts there, who knows why one particular ghost shows up in one place or another. It's believed that a lot of the times the ghosts emanate from someone who has had a violent death or someone who feels like he's been killed while he still had something that he needed to achieve in his life. But just like any place where people have died, there's going to be all kinds of supernatural things that people are going to claim to have seen. And someday I do hope to go there when I can get myself over to Delaware. I don't know how many people out there say, I'm going to Delaware or whatever. It's usually part of another trip, but I do think that there's enough interesting stuff here that, you know, I think people should consider it. The next kind of creepy story that I came across, most of these things I've gotten off of some websites, so I do need to give credit where credit is due, because there's just a lot of things that you find scouring the web, and this particular information I got off of a website called Graveyard Shift, and I can't see the person's name on here who runs it. I'll have to check it out another time, but anyways, it's a great place to go and find some of these stories. There's a cemetery in Frankfort, Delaware, and it is so to be the home of a strange ghost that is actually, it takes the form of a catman. You can argue that, well, encountering any ghost is strange, but this is definitely stranger than usual. And this particular catman, he's unpredictable where he appears or what he does when he shows up. A lot of the time, he is said to be someone who was once a caretaker at this place. And the cemetery is surrounded by a stone wall. This is a really old cemetery, and the ghost of the catman, if you don't see it when you go there, there are actually some ways in which you can actually conjure up that ghost and bring him out to see him, though it's highly unrecommended due to what it is that he does to people who disturb his normal routine. When he does appear, it's said that what he's doing usually is chasing off vagrants or vandals, people who are going out there to disturb the graves, or people who are pretty much want to just lounge around that particular cemetery, and, you know, that would kind of, it'll disturb the essence of rest that the ghosts are, or that the dead are having there. And this catman, there's of course a few stories about him. One involves the knocking over of graves. He had a bunch of children who had gone and thought it would be funny to push over some gravestones or to write some graffiti on something, and then they were never seen again. And then there's also a situation where there's this superstition, there's this belief, hesitate to use the word superstition, right? That if you go up to the gate or the wall, the brick wall, depending on the story that you might hear, and you knock on there 3 times, the catman will suddenly appear and he will attack you. What does that mean? Well, I'll leave that up to your imagination. The catman, of course, has several sightings that people have had. There probably aren't as many recently as there have been in the past. It seems that a lot of times when people want to go see the ghosts for themselves, they go on their legend trips and they bring out their video cameras. For some reason, the supernatural things just don't seem to show up there as much. You can argue that, well, that particular ghost just does not want to sit there and be some star in your movie, and who knows what might happen once you turn that video camera off, or you go off on your own and sit down and try to disturb things. You might end up in a situation like the Blair Witch Project, where one by one each person disappears, never to be seen again. We've all seen movies where one unsuspecting person just happens to wander off on his own and suddenly has something happen to him, and then the next person goes and something happens to him as well. And so even though you might be skeptical about all these things, the belief in this catman is still out there, and there are still people out there who want to see it. And who knows, maybe I will find a story where someone does actually give their own account in the modern day about this catman. At this point, I only have one more story that I'm going to tell you about, and this one I think is most interesting to me since it's a maritime story. Maritime stories just again and again always seem to just take me to heart, and it brings out kind of a feeling, a sense of awareness and excitement, something that I don't get with a lot of other things. When I feel inspired the most to do writing or to do work with my research into certain areas, I find that either being by the sea or looking under the stars is some of the most inspiring things that someone can truly feel. So this particular story deals with a light that doesn't have a lighthouse. I have talked about lighthouses before, about haunted lighthouses, ghosts at lighthouses, people who had died there, and now haunt it. But there is a story out of Delaware that concerns what is known as the Corpse Light. This light is seen at Cape Henlopen State Park there in Delaware, and it has no discernible source that anyone can determine. And that being the case, it gives you kind of creepy sense of, oh my gosh, what the heck's going on here? It is rumored that many a sailor has been turned away and into destruction against the rocky cliffs or the rocky shores of the United States, Delaware specifically, of course, by this particular corpse light. And the origin of this corpse light is kind of interesting. I definitely feel that this is one of the more interesting origin stories that I've come across. So this story says that this light dates back to colonial times when the British soldiers stormed into a Native American ceremony. And what they did is they actually went in and killed a lot of the guests that were at this ceremony. Some stories claim that it was a marriage ceremony. Others claim that it was a funeral. Either way, the Native Americans were massacred and several of them fled into the woods away from the attackers. After that, the survivors got together, and what they did is they cast a curse on that particular stretch of land there on the coast, where this light would appear. And because this light is in a very bad location, many a mariner has found their destruction with this corpse light. A lot of people claim to have seen it. And of course, when they try and get close to it, it suddenly disappears. And any kind of ghostly light, a lot of people will attribute to some natural phenomenon or whatever. But I would say most mariners who have encountered this sort of thing will certainly tell you that there is nothing natural about this, that there's something eerie and possibly evil about it that is out to get the descendants of the colonizers here in America who took away everything from them, including their families. When I'm able to get myself down to Delaware, I definitely want to go and check this place out. Because it's in a park, of course, I'm probably going to have to do a good deal of hiking to get to that point. I haven't done a lot of hiking in recent years. I'm kind of getting up there and I haven't been doing a lot of exercising. And so how dedicated am I to go and find this corpse light or to see if I can find out where it's supposed to be? Well, we'll find out when I'm able to get myself to Delaware. But then again, who knows if the people at that park there are going to be able to tell me where this corpse light is supposed to be emanating from, or if there is something there that can explain a lot of what the sailors have said going through there. The sailors nowadays, they do still believe a lot of things that we might consider superstition. Not all of them, but a lot of them do, of course. And some of them say it's from firsthand experience that you may scoff if you want to, or as the ghostly crew says, you may smile if you mind to, but perhaps you'll lend an ear and you will go and you will see this for yourself, and then you will accept the fact that this corpse light exists and this ship went down as a result of what that corpse light did to us. And there are many shipwrecks there off the coast of Delaware to pretty much back up the story. Many of those shipwrecks, we have no idea what their story is that led up to that point. And I think that it's certainly worth looking into when I get myself down there. Sadly, I am in the western United States, and a lot of the stuff that I'm really interested in is on the eastern coast. So once I'm down there, I will be going out and learning everything I can, not only about the ghost stories and maritime cultures and traditions, but also about other things like that Civil War story I told you about, Fort Delaware. I would like to see Fort Delaware, and I'd like to see other things that are relics of the Civil War period, because I do feel that many people don't always appreciate exactly what conditions were like and how horrible it was during that Civil War. More Americans have died in the Civil War than every other war combined that America has been involved in. So don't be surprised if you go onto a battlefield and you see a ghostly battle taking place between two sides. That is one thing that I think would be really interesting. The main problem with me, of course, is that whenever I go to these places, it's almost never nighttime. And so even when I go pretty close to nighttime and seeing these lighthouses, it's usually not completely dark. dark, and therefore I can't quite see the light. And most of the parks and the areas that these particular lights are located in are closed at a certain time, often like 5 o'clock. And so unless this happens to be an area where you can do a bunch of camping or whatever, you might not be able to go and experience it yourself. Some lighthouses are on private property, and therefore you might be able to go and see something there if they'll let you on there. And of course, if there's some kind of ghost attributed to it. I don't think I'll go off to any places that don't have ghost stories already attributed to them, because anyone can make up a ghost story if they just show up somewhere. And I don't want to be guilty of being someone who just makes up something because he wants to be cool or whatever. So I think I'm going to end this podcast here. I don't know if this seems like kind of an abrupt ending to this one. Delaware, after all, like I said, is a place I haven't been to. But it still has so much to it that really needs to be investigated by anyone interested in history. We always hear these stories about the big events in history, but a lot of the little things we just never really appreciate. And as usual, anyone who wishes to have me talk about something specific here on the podcast, all you have to do is email me at folklorenow33@gmail.com, and I will look over it and I'll consider whether or not to run it on the podcast. So far, I've had little response to these requests, probably because not as many people are listening to this podcast as I'd like, but I will continue to put these out there and see if anyone is really interested in hearing about folklore and interested in knowing about these stories that go on and other kinds of traditions that go on in all the countries throughout the world, and of course the 50 states. And so this ends the Delaware podcast. I hope you have a wonderful day, and I hope you tune in next time on the next episode of Balladishanish Folklore Now.